Sled dogs have always been part of the Inuit culture and were the means by which the culture spread across the Arctic and subarctic. The first Inuit to come to Labrador brought with them sled dogs, dogs that allowed them to hunt, haul heavy loads, and travel vast distances along the Labrador coast and interior. When European settlers arrived in Labrador and northern Newfoundland, they quickly adopted sled dog technology. Dog sled teams were essential to winter survival in the region. Besides being a means of transportation between settlements, they were essential for carrying goods and supplies, expanding the reach of the hunters and trappers. Over time, dog teams were used across Newfoundland and Labrador during the winter months to carry mail, to move timber and lumber camps, and to help with household chores like carrying wood and water. Even an inexperienced driver could rely on the skill of a good dog team. A story from the 1930s tells of a Newfoundland ranger, a government services employee, on a solo trip from Deer Lake to Woody Point on a very stormy winter night. To help keep himself warm, the ranger had decided to wrap himself in a thick blanket for the trip. As he proceeded through the cold, blinding storm, he began to have trouble moving and couldn't get his arms free of the blanket. He quickly found the blanket had frozen solid, and he couldn't move. He couldn't direct the dogs. The dogs continued to run through the storm, and the ranger started to fear he would be lost to the wilderness. Due to the extreme stamina and intelligence of the dogs, they knew their way home. They brought the ranger to the front door of the trapper's cabin, and the ranger, likely embarrassed, was carried into the house like a frozen block of wood, only to be thawed by the roaring fire. They were an essential component of the Grenfell Mission's medical service. They allowed doctors and nurses to provide medical outreach and transported the sick and injured to clinics. In the latter part of the 1940s, Dr. Anthony Padden of the Grenfell Mission would come to rely on his trusted dog team as his main means of winter transportation in the caring of his patients. And during World War II, dog teams run by the American military would be stationed at Goose Bay, Stephenville, and Gander, providing vital search and rescue services.
My name is Dave Padden, and I'm from Central Labrador originally. My father was a doctor in that area for many years, and he was in the Navy during World War II. Now, I can tell you that during World War II, a large number of military aircraft were ferried through Goose Bay, Labrador, and Gander on the island of Newfoundland. And due to various factors like pilot inexperience, there was a fair number of accidents and incidents, and a fair number of aircraft on the way into or out of Goose Bay to go across the ocean came to grief and would often end up miles from anywhere down in the woods, and people needed rescuing. The U.S. Air Force had dog teams stationed at both stations, and these dog teams were used fairly frequently to go and rescue downed airmen, and they did a lot of good work.
During World War II, and stationed in Labrador for a time with the American military, was a man who knew a great deal about dog teams. He was the American explorer and dog team driver, Norman D. Vaughan.
Vaughan was a lieutenant colonel and search and rescue specialist with the United States Air Transport Command, which was essentially a component or branch of the United States Army Air Forces. And much like his British counterpart, the Royal Air Force Ferry Command, the Air Transport Command was responsible for delivering supplies and factoring of aircraft to the various overseas combat theaters. So aircraft under this command were constantly transiting bases in Newfoundland and Labrador, specifically Goose Bay, Gander, and Harmon Field at Stephenville. Now, Norman Vaughan was an interesting character and no stranger to Newfoundland or Labrador. And he was born in Salem, Massachusetts in 1905, and as a youth took an interest in polar exploration. Interestingly, his connection to Newfoundland and St. Anthony in particular predated the Second World War. And it happened that one of his heroes was Sir Wilfrid Grenfell, who opened the Grenfell Mission Hospital in St. Anthony. And it was to St. Anthony that Vaughan went in the mid-1920s to work for Grenfell. And there, under the guidance of a local man, Vaughan honed his skills as a dog sled driver, bringing in sled loads of wood for the mission hospital furnace, and eventually helping to deliver medical supplies to isolated communities. After a year at St. Anthony, Vaughn returned to the United States to continue his studies at Harvard University. But before long, he was back on his sled, this time to accompany Admiral Richard Byrd on his expedition to the South Pole in 1928.
The supply ship was readied for its long journey. Admiral Byrd on deck, along with the ship's skipper, Captain Melville. On farewells between Paul Seipel, Boy Scout chosen to go along, his parents, and radio operator Berkner and his wife. Good luck, Admiral. Bring me back a polar bear.
And when the U.S. entered the war in December of 1941, Vaughn was in his mid-30s. That was well above the draft age, but he still wished to be actively involved in the conflict, so he joined the Air Force. And because of his age and university background, he was commissioned as a first lieutenant. And one of his first postings in 1942 was to Goose Bay, Labrador, to establish the American presence there, because the U.S. was to shortly begin ferrying aircraft to the United Kingdom in large numbers. And that same year, during one such ferrying operation, six P-38 Lightning fighters and two B-17 Flying Fortress bombers force-landed on the Greenland ice cap, the Lost Squadron, as it was later called. All the airmen were rescued, but shortly after the rescue, it came to light that a secret Norden bomb site had been left behind in one of the downed B-17s. And it fell to Vaughn, because of his experience, to take a dog team over the glacier and recover the bomb site. And it was Vaughn, too, who the Air Force called upon to go by dog team to recover the remains of the crew of a B-26 Marauder medium bomber that force-landed at Saglek in northern Labrador in December of 1942. And some people may be familiar with that story where the crew, they survived the forced landing, only to starve to death after about 2 months. Vaughn also pushed forward the idea of using dog teams to transport soldiers wounded during the last major German offensive campaign on the Western Front.
Remembered as the Battle of the Bulge, it was a major offensive and would incur a great deal of casualties.
4 weeks had passed since von Rundstedt's desperate blow to stave off inevitable defeat had been launched. 4 weeks, and the German offensive had been thrown into reverse gear. The German bulge was steadily shrinking before the advancing Allied forces.
And whereas it took four men to carry a stretcher with a wounded soldier on it, away from the front for treatment, a dog team could do it. You had one person to drive the dogs, and you had the dogs, and they were much quicker.
Unfortunately, however, by the time the men and dogs got overseas, the weather had turned to rain, melting the snow and turning everything to mud.
Vaughn wasn't done with his plans for the use of the noble husky dogs.
And having returned from overseas in the spring of 1945, Vaughn began considering ways of improving the Air Force's rescue capabilities in the event of a downed aircraft.
After giving it careful consideration, Vaughn came up with a plan that was bold, but yet simple.
He suggested dropping dogs and doctors by parachute. Now, one of the Air Force's main search and rescue stations was located at Presque Isle in Maine, and it was there that Vaughn carried out several experimental airdrops, first using a fake wooden dog and eventually, and successfully, using a real thing.
Vaughn had proven his theory that parachuting dogs safely worked. The only question now was where and when they might be needed. Back in St. Anthony, in the winter of 1944-45, a severe case of distemper had struck down the entire Grenfell Mission's beloved Husky Dog Team. When word reached Vaughn that the mission had lost their dogs, he jumped at the chance to help.
So a call went out to Charles Curtis, who was the superintendent in St. Anthony, the boss of the IGA, with an inquiry, would you like to have some dogs? And of course, he leapt at the chance. These were very good dogs, well trained, well experienced, and very healthy. And they needed a home. So he said, by all means, send them up on the first boat, or first available transport. And he was told, well, I think we'll bring them up tomorrow. Do you have a large open field? And if you do, can you please mark a large X in it? So that sounded a little mysterious, but I guess Curtis caught on to what the plan was. And at the time this was happening, my father was on the way from Northwest River in central Labrador to St. Anthony in a U.S. Air Force, what they call a crash rescue vessel. And he arrived in St. Anthony a couple of days before.
Word quickly spread around St. Anthony, and on Sunday morning, October 21st, just about the entire town turned out to witness the unusual event.
Two U.S. Air Force aircraft appeared over St. Anthony. One was a DC-3 and one was what was called a PBY, better known in Newfoundland and Labrador as a CANSO. And they made a number of circles around the village, I guess, to try and gauge the wind. And they dropped by parachute some radios and a camera. And so radios were placed on the crash rescue boat. So the aircraft made a couple of more passes. I think they dropped some dummy loads by parachute to try and get a good handle on the wind. And then they decided to do the real thing. So the DC-3 flew over with the CANSO following along behind. And at what they thought was the right moment, a parachute blossomed underneath the airplane with a dog dangling from it, a perhaps perplexed husky dog, and drifted down. Another run was made, and two dogs were dropped. And one of them ended up in, I think, alder bushes, but he was fine. And of course, by this time, with each succeeding drop, they were getting closer and closer, and they dropped a total of 8 dogs, and by the time the last one went down, it was landed almost right near the reception party.
The operation was a success, and the Grenfell mission was once again in the company of the noble husky dogs.
So, 8 husky dogs, they each had a collar on with a little message, a note of paper, and it gave the dog's name and a description. There was one called Tanny, T-A-N-N-E-Y, and the description was shy but a good holler. And another one was, the note was a good trail dog. So each one of them had a description.
The event had been so noteworthy that the morning paper in the capital city of St. John's would write, under the headline, "Huskies dropped by plane. Grenfell Mission gets team of Siberian dogs." It would go on to say, and I quote, "The animals were found in excellent condition, and not one having suffered an injury during the descent to Earth. They will be used by the mission in its winter work along the extensive northern coast, carrying doctors and nurses, and bringing patients to hospital."
These dogs were a gift from the U.S. Air Force. When they were all safely on the ground, the skipper of the crash rescue boat came ashore and presented Charles Curtis, the superintendent, with a certificate of ownership, and would he please accept these dogs as a gift on behalf of the U.S. Army Air Force, which he, of course, was only too glad to do.
What started as one man's idea to help an organization he loved and respected came to fruition with the dedication and skill of American military technicians and pilots.
In his own words, here's what Vaughn had to say, and I quote, "The mission asked for help, and I jumped at the chance. Within 3 days, we were flying dogs and 2 sleds to St. Anthony. One by one, the parachute-ready dogs were pushed out of the plane. The whole village was at the target field. After that, we received a number of letters from the St. Anthony mission thanking us for donating our dogs. 9 months later, we received a special letter detailing the work the doctors have been able to accomplish because of our dogs."
But the real heroes of this story are the dogs. Almost 80 years later, the husky breed lives and thrives in communities and homes throughout Newfoundland and Labrador.
Written by David Hebbard, Daryl Hillier, and Dave Padden. Research, Daryl Hillier and Dave Padden. Recording and soundscape, David Hebbard. Additional source information, My Life of Adventure, Norman D. Vaughan with Cecil B. Murphy, Stackpole Books. Heritage NL, The Daily News. Among the Deep Sea Fishers, Volume 43, Number 4, January 1946. An independent podcast of Aviation History, Newfoundland and Labrador, 2024.